Welcome to the Fastest 5 Minutes, presented by Kroll and Morin. We are your co-hosts for this edition, Peter Ayer and Yuan Zhou, bringing you a bi-weekly summary of significant government contracts, legal and regulatory developments that no government contracts lawyer or executive should be without. Yuan's going to get us started with an interesting Federal Circuit decision.
Peter, on March 6th, the Federal Circuit issued a decision in AVIEW Technologies and held that AVIEW's allegations at the pleading stage that its contract with the government via an end user license agreement, or EULA, which was actually incorporated into another contractor's federal supply schedule contract, was sufficient to establish jurisdiction under the Contract Disputes Act. Now, as background, the FDA purchased a software license from an authorized reseller of AVIEW's products through a task order issue under AGSA FSS contract. Now, the task order and contract incorporated an undated and unsigned version of AVIEW's EULA. And after that task order expired, AVIEW alleged that the FDA was misappropriating its data in violation of the EULA terms and conditions, AVIEW's IP rights, and the Trade Secrets Act. Now, AVIEW submitted a claim to the FDA, but the contracting officer instructed AVIEW that it would need to have the reseller submit a pass-through claim on AVIEW's behalf. AVIEW appealed to the Civilian Board of Contract Appeals on a deemed denial basis. At the board, the government initially moved to dismiss the appeal for lack of jurisdiction on the basis that AVIEW was not a contractor within the meaning of the CDA. The board also initially denied the motion, but later ordered the parties to file supplemental briefs addressing whether a software license is a procurement contract. The board subsequently dismissed the appeal on the basis that the EULA was not a procurement contract within the meaning of the CDA. 2 years later, the Federal Circuit reversed the board's decision and remanded for further proceedings. The Federal Circuit explained that, well, in order to establish jurisdiction under the CDA, a plaintiff needs only to allege the existence of an express or implied contract with the government. The appellant's obligation to prove the existence of an enforceable contract must be resolved as a decision on the merits. And because AVIEW alleged that it was a party to the FSS contract and the FDA task order by virtue of each incorporating the EULA, the board had jurisdiction to hear the appeal. On remand, the board still must consider whether AVIEW was a party to the FSS contract and the FDA task order, or otherwise has enforceable rights through the various agreements. Peter, back to you.
Great. Next up, an announcement from DOJ. On March 7th, the Deputy Attorney General delivered remarks announcing a new pilot program at DOJ to incentivize whistleblowers to report corporate misconduct by offering monetary rewards. This program will encourage whistleblowers to report a broad range of potentially criminal activity by bridging the divide between DOJ's priorities and other whistleblower mechanisms, such as the False Claims Act QI-TAM provisions. Under the pilot program, individuals who come forward with truthful information about significant corporate or financial misconduct may be offered cash rewards, but only where there is no competing financial disclosure incentive, and only if the individual was not involved in the criminal activity itself. Further, the information must not have been previously known to the government, and it must be provided voluntarily, meaning not in response to any government inquiry, pre-existing reporting obligation, or imminent threat of disclosure. Whistleblowers under this program would also be second in line to victims, who must be properly compensated before any rewards are paid. Finally, this new incentive for whistleblowers heightens the pressure on companies to carefully weigh whether to make use of DOJ's new voluntary self-disclosure mechanisms. DOJ noted that these incentives reinforce each other and create a force multiplier encouraging companies and individuals to tell DOJ what they know and to incentivize those disclosures on a timely basis. We're expecting more details in the next couple of months as this program is crystallized and rolled out more broadly. Back to you, Juan.
Thanks, Peter. Next up, on February 25th, the DOD issued a class deviation that prohibits DOD contracting officers from requiring, as a condition of contract award, certain defense contractors to disclose a greenhouse gas inventory or any other report on greenhouse gas emissions unless an exception is made or a waiver is granted. Now, under the class deviation, DOD contracting officers should not consider greenhouse gas emission information that may otherwise be provided in annual reps and certs. There are two exceptions to this prohibition. First, this information may be required if a contracting official that is at least one level above the contracting officer determines that this information is necessary to verify a voluntary disclosure of such inventory or some other report. And second, the head of the contracting activity may issue a waiver to require this information on a contract-by-contract basis, provided that the information relating to GHG emissions is directly related to the performance of the contract. And in issuing that waiver, the HCA has to ensure that any required information is clearly described. Peter?
One last item. On March 12th, DOD published a final rule expanding access to defense contractors who wish to participate in the Defense Industrial Base Cybersecurity Program. The rule will allow all defense contractors who own or operate unclassified information systems that process, store, or transmit covered defense information. It allows those companies to benefit from information sharing about emergent cybersecurity threats that occur between participants in the DIB Cybersecurity Program. Previously, this program was really only available to defense contractors. So an interesting new tool there that will now be more broadly available. That will wrap up this edition. This has been the Fastest 5 Minutes, brought to you by Kroll & Mooring. See you again in 2 weeks. If you have any questions, I can be reached at 202-624-2807. And Yuan can be reached at 202-624-2666. Thanks for joining us.
The Fastest 5 Minutes podcast is brought to you by Kroll & Mooring LLP. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, and if you enjoy our show, please leave us a review. You can find more information at kroll.com/govconpodcast.